I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Hello and welcome to the June podcast of A Damn Fine Cup of Culture. I'm Matt and I'm joined by Alan. Hello, Alan.
Hello.
And I'm actually literally joined by Alan, not in a kind of weird Siamese twin way, but he's in the same room as me, which is rare for us.
It's quite odd seeing you, Matt, without your face in a square with your name underneath it. Actually just sitting next to you is quite interesting experience with recording.
Absolutely. It's the only way we can prove that we're not actually AI created. Basically, Alan's here in Switzerland, so we're going to be talking about that stalwart of Swiss culture, the Japanese director Hirokazu Koreeda. Perhaps let's start off with just a couple of general points about him. Possibly our listeners know him best from Shoplifters, which was nominated for the Best Foreign Language Oscar in the year that Alfonso Cuarón won for Roma. And some people would still say that Roma was perhaps not the right winner, but that's a different discussion. And our favorite Swiss cinema, the Rex Cinema in Bern, has just finished, or is just finishing, a series of Koreeda movies from his very first, Maruboshi, to his most recent film, last year's Monster, which won the 2023 Cannes Best Screenplay Award. So let's perhaps just start with how we got to know Koreeda and his films. Alan, what was your first experience of Koreeda?
I think the first film I saw of his was Afterlife, which I think was a film that I saw described what the plot was and thinking this could be exactly in my wheelhouse. I love the concept behind it. But so often when you do see that, you see the film and it's disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I loved about it was that it just was pitch perfect. It definitively told almost the story that reflects the concept. So that immediately made me sort of intrigued as to the director and his other work.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, let's perhaps summarize it just very briefly for our audience, for the ones who haven't seen it. So Afterlife is basically about the literal afterlife. The idea is that the people who die all come to this way station of sorts, I guess,
yeah,
right? Where they have 5 days, I think, to basically decide on one of their memories. They decide on one of their memories that will then be filmed. And that film is what they take into the great beyond forever. That's basically what is left of them. A memory, but not just a memory, but a memory turned into film. I talked to someone about this and they said they couldn't quite warm up to the film because they felt it's another film about filmmaking. But I'm not sure. I think if it is a film about filmmaking, and it is obviously to some extent, it still feels very different to me. What about you?
It's interesting someone describing it as a film about filmmaking, because to some extent, I didn't even think about it till you said that just now, that to me, it is almost a film. It's a film about loss, but it's also a film about organizations and people working in organizations and how you have this sort of slightly surreal organization where you have all the people working there who are putting together a film for this person's memory. And you see the minutiae, which is recognizable, I think, that everyone who's done a day job can tell the sort of, the sort of petty obstacles, the sort of slight clashes between people. It's also recognizable within the context of it's the afterlife.
Absolutely. And I think it's definitely one of the most interesting and original takes on the afterlife. I mean, we've all seen the kind of the pearly gates, the clouds, the angels. We've also seen other versions, but this specific one, it's both very, very down to earth. I mean, it's extremely naturalistic for having such a fantastic topic. But there's also a poetry about it, and it's not the kind of in-your-face poetry, we're being artistic. There's a certain, how should I put this? I think there's this very gentle poetry about it, and gentle not in a kind of sense of being mild and moderate. It's not lukewarm as such. It's just, I think he very much works with the quieter notes on the kind of, on his orchestra, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the idea of most depictions of heaven up the grandiosity, that like you will be at the top of Mount Olympus, you will be in this amazing surreal world. And I think what works so well with this film is that it does work on this low register of a sort of recognizable, almost like building stroke office block stroke studio, where it's all meant to be set. And to some extent, that makes you more aware that loss and death isn't epic, that it is itself very low key. But then you also have the memory scene, someone thinking, well, what is the one memory of my life I want to treasure? which is a very sort of beautiful idea. And to sort of have a film about the afterlife, which is both very low-key and very beautiful, I think is a combination exploring it that you don't see that often, because more often the afterlife will be, it will be huge, or it will be incredibly symbolic. That to have it done in this way is such a unique combination, and it tells that story perfectly.
Mm-hmm. I think what it also does, and I mean, it's difficult for us as kind of Western viewers to perhaps talk about this in much detail, but I feel with Kore-eda, it always feels very specific to the culture. Most of his films, not all, but most of his films are set in Japan. And there's something recognizable also from other Japanese movies, the bureaucracy, mm-hmm. the way that people interact, the way, you know, kind of respect is also codified. But it, at the same time, I find his films to be very, very universal.
And I think it's interesting just how this was the first film of his I saw. And in many respects, it's very atypical. Its high concept nature, its fantastical nature, is really not what I found when sort of going to explore other films. I kind of thought maybe this is a more fantastical minded director. And actually, when you go to with other films, that they're not. But like you said, they almost have these qualities, recognizable qualities about the functioning of a society, the functioning of a family, the functioning of a small group of people that is at the heart of Afterlife does carry over to these other films.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, one thing that his films are very much is they're all ensemble pieces. And I think they all have families, not necessarily in the literal sense, but groups that come together that form relationships over time, like families. Sometimes it's families you choose. Sometimes it's kind of the kind of families you're thrown into with others. I think the workplace here has an element almost of family, because in Afterlife, it's you find out, and this is a spoiler, so those who are very spoiler averse, perhaps switch this off right now. But basically, it's the people who can't choose, who after 5 days haven't decided on one memory. It's not punishment. It's basically they are told, okay, you will now be working here. They can still at the later point decide on a memory. But their task becomes to guide these people, to help these people choose, which I think is really sweet. But it has already this kind of early family dynamic, but perhaps less explicitly so than his later films.
Definitely. But I think that is sort of the heart of a lot of his films, is that it's characters being put together by a circumstance and then exploring that exploring that on a very sort of personal level. So although in this context you're in a fantastical setting, it's really interesting that he still goes back to this that is at the heart of so many of his films. And yet frequently it's a family, but it isn't always a family that means these people are forced together. It could be just the situation.
Exactly. And I mean, we're now already talking about Kore-eda in general. What else makes a Kore-eda movie for you? I mean, we've talked about these kind of families or quasi-families. We've talked about the tone, which is definitely the quieter notes on the register. I would say for me, it's, you know, it's something that I struggled to define early on. Also having started with Afterlife and then having the others be a bit different in that they're not high concept. But I've come to decide that in a way, he reminds me a bit of Mr. Rogers. You know, basically there's this fundamental kindness. I used to say it's nice or it's gentle, but that doesn't quite get at it. I think it's really his characters, they're very often flawed. There very often are tensions between them. But they all try. They try to be kind. There's this struggle to be good and to do right by others. That doesn't feel tacky. That doesn't feel, you know, compare it to, I don't know, these horrible Christian movies. Mm. Totally different. It's really, it's people struggling to be good, to do good, but not in a kind of high-fluting, dramatic, epic way, but in a very human way.
I think there's definitely, I agree with that, because what I sort of really sort of discovered and why I think he's a director that interests me, that if he's got a new film coming out, I want to see, is that often when you see what the film is about, you look at it and you think, well, I know what that will be. That looks like it's going to be quite a twee story. Maybe it's going to be quite a low level, pleasant, feel good drama. The sort of film where, you know, it's feel good. There'll be a bit of darkness in it, but the purpose of the darkness is just to make the feel good land. And I think coming from Britain, we have a huge industry that churns this stuff out. And actually, what I find really interesting is that's the starting point, but he always does something interesting with it. Mm-hmm. And he always goes somewhere that you don't expect. And to sort of take these elements that that you feel you know. You feel this is comfortable ground for a family drama with kindness, with a hint of darkness. But then to just do something interesting and to make it feel like it isn't a formula. You're not watching a feel-good formulaic film. You're watching something that is intriguing, that, mm-hmm. that will maybe show you something that the darkness is not where you expect, and or even the feel-good nature isn't the end of the film. There's a feel-good aspect to it, but the ending might not leave you walking out the cinema in a high. The way that it sort of plays with these elements but tells something new is, I think you've got a whole raft of his films, like the most recent Monster, like Shoplifters, Our Little Sister, even Still Walking, that if you saw a summary, you might think, oh, I know this film. And then when you watch it, there's enough in it that is uniquely him.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of his films, when you look at them, there's definitely, at the very least, a subtext, if not more than that, also of melancholy, of mourning, of loss. I find that, especially with the films that we've now rewatched. I mean, there's, for instance, Our Little Sister, which I think is the one that on the surface seems the most to be just a feel-good film. It's about basically three sisters. Their father, their estranged father, has died. When they go to the funeral, to the memorial service, they find that with a later wife, he had another daughter who's a couple of years younger than them, and that their little sister comes to live with them. And I mean, that sounds like it could be sentimental and tacky. And I think it inches towards that, but it never gets there, because there is still this underlying melancholy, this sense of loss, this sense of also uncertainty. And even when the film ends, and it ends, I think, relatively happily, there's no big dramas, there's no big crises, but at the end of it, it's not like everything is resolved. These people there, they still have to deal with their flaws, with their anxieties, and they will be there. But at the same time, they've come together as a newly formed family, and that is, I find, is something that he just does so beautifully, with a very light, subtle touch.
That's the heart of it, the subtlety of it. The idea that you get the outline of a feel-good of, you know, the sisters resolve their differences, but also they don't.
Absolutely.
And you absolutely get to the end and think, you know, 5 years from now, a couple of these characters won't be talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that there isn't necessarily because one of them is bad. It's just the way people function as humans. And mm-hmm. I think as you follow all the characters in that film, or in any of the films that I think are in this sort of mini genre he's perfected, that there aren't the bad people in the film. Like in Our Little Sister, you know, the dad's gone. Like, mm-hmm. it's the people who are having to deal with this, trying to interact with each other, and there is no simple answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I think you get the feel-good moments where you feel that they are making bonds, they are progressing together, but then it feels utterly realistic when they behave like humans and don't get together. And it mm-hmm. doesn't feel like, oh, one's the bad thing, one's the good thing that we want. It is just telling this story.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. One thing perhaps at this point that we can say is I think he's one of the best directors when it comes to working with children. Mm. I think children in film are difficult anyway, and there's some directors who do a really good job with it, but I think he's very much at the top in that respect. I think his children, they feel real. They feel kind of grounded. There's none of the tweeness that you often get. They're not precocious kind of little adults. They are believable, and they're believable in a way that I think, again, grounds his narratives very much. And obviously with his families and quasi-families, you very often have exactly that also interaction across the generations. Often it's kind of three generations, kind of grandparents, parents, children, and the different dynamics there. And I think the dynamics, they always, to me, feel very, very lived in.
I think especially the children are a good part of that. If the children seem credible, then the bigger family will seem credible. And I think his most recent film, Monster, the two sort of leads in that are incredible. And I mean, I think it would make a very nice companion piece with Celine Sciamma's recent Petit Mama, in the sense that I think she also has this ability to make children good performances, but interesting characters.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just, oh, this is the cute kid that's going to say the cute lines.
Yeah.
They are characters that have a depth to them that is equal to the adults, or even maybe more interesting than the adults. And, and then that you create a character like this and then get a performance from a child actor that captures it is an incredible talent. And it's one I think you get spoiled watching these kind of films, because the moment you watch another film and they haven't got the talent of the child actors, you suddenly sort of feel like, oh my God, this is really bad. And then you feel bad for the child because the child doesn't know any better, and you feel bad for the wider circumstance. But I think that it's very easy to give a lot of leeway to child actors not being very good because you think they're children. And then suddenly you see someone like in Monster, where they are perfect. They fit the film. And it's something, oh, it can be done.
Absolutely. Very much so. I think there's one thing where I think Koreeda sometimes tries his hand at that really works out well for me. I think, as I said, when it comes to the families, the relationships, the child characters, the kindness, I think he's fantastic. But I think a lot of his films really have this kind of, the tenor is really the emotion and the vibe and the relationships. The more plot he has in his films, the more there's a risk that he doesn't play to his strengths. And I think sometimes what he does have is he's got plot that he tries to keep somewhat elliptic, somewhat mysterious, not filling in all the blanks. But sometimes you're left wondering, not so much, you know, what are the blanks, but just you're left with so many different interpretations that are at odds with each other, and I'm not sure that quite works. I don't know, you say you haven't seen The Third Murder, right?
Mm.
And The Third Murder, it's basically a bit of a thriller, a bit of a drama, a bit even of a courtroom drama. It's about a man who's killed another man, and why did he do it? It's pretty clear that he did do it. And towards the end of that, he introduces doubts about, did he really do it? Did he say the truth? And the thing is that it feels like suddenly a different film, a different director, a different style has come in that sits at odds with what he does best. Mm. And I think you've said that you quite like Broker, right?
Yeah.
I find Broker has a bit of that problem. Towards the end, he goes for the slightly elliptic epilogue. And I think emotionally it works, but you're left with a couple too many question marks. How was that for you? Did the ending there work for you?
I thought it worked for me. And I felt Broker is quite atypical for him, because I think it's probably his film that he aims most to be conventionally feel good, in the sense that it's, you know, the characters are more broadly comic, I think, on a level. And it's actually one of his films that actually has almost more plot. It's one of the ones where the sort of ins and outs of the plot as you're following it are quite conventional. I really enjoyed it for that. And I enjoyed the plot in itself. I quite liked following the twists and turns. But I thought it was interesting that he had a different approach to the characters than usual.
Mm-hmm.
And they reminded me, and this is high praise, they reminded me a bit like a Lubitsch film, in the sense that they're very simple on one level, that you feel you know them immediately. And then he just makes them engaging, and he gets you to work out a lot of their story by just the really simple interactions. And it's on this sort of much sort of more, I suppose, lightweight tone, even though if you see what the plot is about and sort of child broken, you wouldn't think that. But I actually felt like, I guess I sort of bought into it as a more approachable comedic film about almost lovable rogues. And I think it is a really well-made film of that. So yeah, I think fitting it with some of his more, I guess, probably more interesting films, it does stick out a little bit. It does feel like quite atypical. I can remember it was quite badly reviewed when it came out, I think partly because of that. But I have this soft spot of it, almost thinking, almost looking at it as a sort of golden age comedy. It's sort of, it really works on that. And it's got a lot of the strength that I associate with that era.
I think, anyway, that's from what we've said so far, it might not sound like it, but he is often quite funny. And it's not the kind of laugh out loud, ha ha humor. He doesn't have punchlines as such, or very rarely. But I think his characters, the constellations and the individual types that you have, there's very often something funny there.
Yeah.
Something he's keenly aware also of the ridiculousness of some of these characters, even the drama, even the sadness that's there, especially in the flaws. I think that also is one of the things that makes his characters so human. He doesn't shy away from allowing us to laugh at them and with them. And I think that always works really well for me.
I think it's testament to his skill to get you on board with the characters that I think a lot of his comedy comes to some extent that you know this character well enough that suddenly you realize they've just been told something, or they're just suddenly put in a scenario that you know for them is going to be very weird and crazy, or like very sort of, over-the-top words to use, but I think you find it funny because you know who it's happening to or mm-hmm. who's saying it, rather than it being, this is a zinger, this is a comedy line.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one film I really enjoyed that in is the film that he made in France, so The Truth, which I think is not one of his better films, but I think what I really enjoyed about it is there is a terrific, I felt, comedic performance from Catherine Deneuve as this sort of aging film star. And everything she says, almost every reaction she has, is this sort of comedy that you realize that she doesn't mean what she says, or she's being a bit bitchy about someone else while sounding nice, or she's sounding like she's concerned, but she's offending them. And that, you know, obviously she just wants to get the film done, but how she stresses it is completely done in a way that feels like being a diva. And I think it has this comedic quality that runs through it, which it was the highlight of the film for me.
That one, I have to say, I've just watched it once. I don't remember it that well, but I definitely remember, yeah, Catherine Deneuve was very funny in it. It's not a bad film. It's just in comparison, I think that's the thing. He's done some of his films are just so perfect at what they do. I think that's also one of the things that Broke has suffered from a bit, that it came after Shoplifters. And I think Shoplifters was also one where he reached a wider audience probably than before. And it's also a film that I could imagine people came out of it and they remembered mainly the feel-good bits. And I mean, if you look at the poster, for instance, it's a film that you think, yeah, you expect will be feel-good. And there is that there. But even there in Shoplifters, I think you have the somewhat queasy, somewhat uncomfortable elements, because you find out later on that the family is actually not family in the sense of they're not related. And, you know, for instance, when the grandmother of the family dies and they basically just bury her in a house so they can keep living in the house. And there's this rather unsavory undertone, but it comes from the fact that these are basically desperate people. I think that especially you have elements that almost play like family movie, you know, fun for all the family, these kind of roguish characters, but always with a twinkle in the eye. But there is a desperation underneath it that you would not expect.
I think that there is definitely the films that he's made that are richer in terms of material within the film. And I think there's elements which they're more satisfying, like a film like Shoplifters, that really there is a lot going on. It's an impressive film, but there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot, you know, the darker moments are mollified by an understanding of the characters. The funnier moments have this darker element that sort of cares into a really interesting story and a really interesting commentary, I think, about people who are on the fringes and who have this desperation. He does make films that aren't as deep. and I think sometimes it is a case of, I suppose, glass half full with these films, of going, okay, I'm not going to get the same really sort of rich experience I'll get with some of his other films, but there is a lot there to enjoy. And especially because I think in his lighter films, it is more geared to be funny or enjoyable anyway. I think he's in that mode, so you can enjoy it for that. But I think you're right, they are not quite as rich as some of his other films. And I think you sort of have to accept that and realize, like I said, the glass is half full.
At the same time, you still get all the things that are very much, very typically Corrida. I think even in lesser Corrida, you're still getting something that you're not really getting elsewhere. And I think that it's definitely always worth it just for that. We've mentioned Monster a couple of times, and since it's his most recent one, should we perhaps finish by talking about that one a bit more in detail? When we started watching Monster at the cinema the first time around, I found myself really struggling, weirdly enough. It's basically a film that's told in three parts. The first one is told from the perspective of the mother, single mother of a young boy. The second part is a teacher who teaches that boy who gets into trouble. The third part is then from the perspective of that boy. It's being compared a bit to Rashomon, which I think is a bit of a shallow, superficial comparison, because with Rashomon, the point is that there's a clash between these stories. With this one, it's more like puzzle pieces. You get a puzzle, but you get the first couple of pieces and you don't quite recognize what the picture is. And I remember for the first third or even half of Monster, I wasn't sure whether I was going to like it, because I had to struggle and I tried to fill these pieces with meaning. I tried to fill in the blanks and doing it completely wrong at times. And then I started to realize that was actually what the film was working with. People who only see part of the picture struggling to make sense of it and failing. And because of how they fail, making things worse, even though they want to do the best for their child, for their for whoever, for their pupil. Mm. But I was really struggling for half of the film. And when things fell into place, because I'd been struggling, it hit all the harder. Mm. What was it like for you?
I think, so similarly, I think at the beginning of the film, I think I fell into the trap, which I often do with these films, is that it's a genre you sort of feel you know, and you start watching it, and it's like, oh, there's this problem child, we're going to get the redemption of the problem child. You kind of think, oh, I've seen this sort of feel-good film before, and I think there's a lot in the first, 20 minutes that kind of pushes you a little bit in that direction. And then I think the film just becomes more interesting again. Mm. I think it's exactly that, this idea that there isn't a simple story here, that people with the best intentions aren't helping because they don't see, they're like you, they don't see the full picture. And I think it's a really interesting film that, to some extent, you never see the full picture. Right? Mm-hmm. It sort of leaves you on this weirdly ambiguous ending that, without being spoilers, I've read reviewers that have taken it completely different ways, but thought that was what it was. So mm-hmm. that at first glance, you might think you've got the ending. But the more you think about it, the more you realize, oh no, I've jumped to a conclusion. It's as ambiguous as the rest of the film. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the full picture. And I think that is quite a sort of genius moment at the end, which is again just the way he takes these stories you think you recognize and he does something genius with it.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And it's also, I've said that, for instance, with The Third Murder, but also with some of his other earlier films, I felt that the more plot-heavy they were, the less they worked at times, because plot is not where I would say I see a strength. But Monster, I think, totally, successfully brings together those two sides, the plot, the mystery, mm-hmm. the puzzle, but also the emotions, the relationships, the dynamics between the characters. And I think it's really for the first time that I've seen him do those two things together at the same time to such strong effect. Mm. And I have to say that for a long time, I think partly also because Afterlife was my first one, it was also my favorite one, it was definitely the most original one. I think all of his films to some extent, some I absolutely love, but it was always, I love this, but Afterlife is still my favorite. And I think now with Monster, I would say I have two films I would put at the same level.
I mean, he's one of my favorite directors, and with my favorite directors, I will change my favorite film depending on mood. So mm-hmm. I think when I'm in a very much a mood of sort of like, I want the sort of crowd pleaser, I want the sort of, like I said, there's almost a Lubitsch comparison, then Broker would be my favorite film of his, just because I think it, as a modern film, it so successfully does that. Other times when maybe I'm feeling a bit melancholy, it's Afterlife. Mm-hmm. I think there's something family-wise about Our Little Sister that I think is perfect. But I think it would change. I would struggle to pin down a favorite film, which I think is a hallmark of all my absolute favorite directors, that they might bring, you know, his next film, I might go into the cinema and I will leave thinking that is his best film. And it's nice to have directors that you can feel that about.
Absolutely. In that respect, it was definitely also really interesting seeing most of his films in his series. We didn't see Hannah, which is a bit of an odd one out. It's a historical film. It's kind of a samurai movie, but it still feels like a Koreeda. So I think you've not seen it, right?
I've not seen it, no.
If you get a chance to see it, absolutely do see it, because it's not what you expect of him, but it's also not what you'd expect of the samurai movie. And it's also, I think, a really nice one. I would say it's lesser Koreeda, which always sounds so, it sounds so unfair, but I think even lesser Koreeda is still very much worth it. But with Monster, perhaps for our audience, those who haven't seen it, I mean, do go and see it. It's absolutely worth it. I think it's one of those films that where it is worth going in not knowing too much. Mm. I think already if you look at what awards it's won, it will give one thing away that I think for a first viewing, it's good if you don't know it, if you come to understand it as the film goes on. We've now seen it twice. It was still a great experience and a very different experience the second time round, but I wouldn't have wanted to miss that first time. And I'm someone who usually goes into films knowing most of what's going to happen. And that's okay with me, but with that one, I was really glad not to know.
Yeah, it's been a slight shame. I am in Switzerland at the moment, but I've timed this slightly poorly. I've just missed the season they were showing at the Rex Cinema. So luckily, the BFI was showing a few last year, but it would have been nice to have seen some of these again as part of the season. Because just planning for this podcast and talking about it now is producing another list of films I need to watch again.
Absolutely. So, that's the problem with podcasts. You come away thinking, I need to watch this, rewatch yes. that. It's basically you end up with less and less and less time and a bigger and bigger backlog. That's what podcasts are for.
Exactly.
So perhaps to end with, since we started with Afterlife, have you got a memory that you would choose? Or is it like with favorite movies, you keep going back and forth?
I mean, but there's also, I think there's the question, I think the podcaster Richard Herring asked is the photo to be used for your obituary, has it been taken yet? And I think that's an interesting question. It's sort of like, I mean, I've got a memory now, but I'm kind of hoping there might be a better one down the line that is the memory that I'd want to use. But I think it would change. I mean, do you have a memory?
I keep going back and forth, but sometimes I do think perhaps me watching a Corridor movie with people I love, that might be a nice memory to turn into, you know, eternity for me.
And that would be quite a meta moment of filming the Corridor film. In your afterlife, with the cast trying to recreate that, they've got to race off, they've got to find copies of his films in the bureaucracy archive, some of them are missing or someone didn't put them back in the right box, and all of this is happening as they try and recreate. I mean, that would be a film in itself. That would be a I find it quite interesting with Afterlife that it's so perfectly made that all the talks of remakes never quite come together, because I think people realize it's been done. But if people want to do a kind of remake, I think we've got the plot now. That's the suggestion that works.
So yes, Hirokazu Koreeda, if you're listening to this podcast, as you obviously are, you know how to get in touch. Okay, this was fun.
Yeah,
we'll have to do this again. You'll have to come back to Switzerland.
Indeed, yes, and go back to see the Rex, which is fantastic cinema.
So yeah, as always, thank you very much to our listeners. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, and goodbye.
Goodbye.